The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley as we now really start to ramp up our preview of the big Champions League final this Saturday. It's, of course, Liverpool taking on Real Madrid in Paris. Jurgen Klopp's side go into the side as favourites. 7-4 on to win the title. Real Madrid, meanwhile, the outsiders at 11-8. Liverpool with a couple of injury doubts, of course, going into the tie, which include Fabinho and Virgil van Dijk. This is what van Dijk had to say when he was asked how he was.
Good, yeah, 100%. So looking forward to Saturday.
Virgin, it seems that the fitness issues are gone, not long gone. You feel ready.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the 2 weeks now, 1.5 weeks of rest definitely helped me, and fully recovered.
He vuelto a entrenar con el equipo que es importante tener buenas sensaciones en un entrenamiento con más intensidad con pelota que hace más movimientos que normalmente haces en un partido y me sentí bien confiante. Es bueno tener confianza después de una lesión así y nada, preparando y para estar listos para el sábado.
Of course, a third meeting then for Liverpool and Real Madrid in the European Cup Champions League finals. At Real Madrid winning 3-1 in 2018. Meanwhile, Liverpool with that 1-0 win back in Paris in 1981. Of course, it's the French capital which they return for Saturday's big game. And there, hosting our coverage, will be Alexis Nunes.
Thanks, Dan. And we're here in a windy, cold, never thought I'd say those words, Paris, but what a week to be. And look at this company that I'm with. Stuart Robson and Gab Marcotis, fresh off of their VIP train from London. Guys, Paris, I mean, Roland Garros is going on. We're here, of course, for the Champions League final. There's no better place to be. Robbo, is this up to scratch for you? Look at this view.
It's a great view. It's a little bit windy, as you said, a little bit cold, but the view, the restaurants, everything about it is magnificent. And Gab will probably take us to the best restaurants, as he always does.
And he'll be paying, I hope, right?
Always paying, yeah.
Always paying. Gab, I mean, I know you're used to some beautiful cities in Italy. I must say Rome is probably the prettiest city I've visited, but Paris?
Hey, Paris is special. It's a city of light. We can see Montmartre in the distance that way. We've got the Eiffel Tower behind us. What more could you want?
Let me tell you, he looked those up before he came on this platform.
No, I've actually been here before, Robbo.
He called Jules and asked references for it. But anyways, we're here for the Champions League final. Real Madrid up against Liverpool. Unbelievably excited for that one. Gab, you're a journalist. We know you have a gazillion narratives. There's the Mbappe narrative. There's the revenge for Liverpool narrative. Which one stands out to you?
For me, just the fact, the box office narrative. These are two of, in my opinion, the top three teams this season. Sorry, Manchester City, but they were knocked out, but would obviously be the third team. You've got that. You've got 13 European Cups for Real Madrid. Nobody's won any more than that. You've got Liverpool with 6. If they win, they go up to 7 into second place. You've got the fact that these are two teams with not just with great history, great brands, but also great in the present day. Real Madrid, this is their fifth Champions League final in the last 8 years. Liverpool, it's their third in the last 5 years. So all of this sets it up nicely, and then there's a revenge factor. Mm. Kiev, Sergio Ramos on Mo Salah. You know that Sergio Ramos, he lives here. He lives right here in Paris. He's going to be up there, maybe with a laser pointer, you know, trying to wind him up again. I'm kidding, Sergio. But so many subtexts, two different styles, two different approaches, but just two of the most prestigious, the most recognized clubs, the most historic clubs in football. And I think that's special for a Champions League final.
And Robbo, a little birdie once told me that you're not really bothered with narratives. We as journalists, we love the fanfare around this, and we love to create these stories. You're more interested in the tactics,
yeah,
though, Robbo. Let me give you a matchup that we're pretty much salivating at.
Yep.
Vinny Jr., Trent Alexander-Arnold. Is that one that gets you excited?
It certainly does. I'm interested to see how both sides play it. Will Trent Alexander-Arnold go back and defend against Vinicius Junior? Because Vinicius Junior, when Real Madrid are being attacked, he stays up the field. He doesn't come back and defend. So they're going to let Alexander-Arnold get forward and get crosses into the box. So they've got to make sure they defend those crosses into the box. Would Toni Kroos want to go out there and defend against Trent Alexander-Arnold? I don't think he would. But then whoever plays right-sided centre-half for Liverpool is going to have to go up against Vinicius Junior. And that combination has been excellent. And the other thing, when you're playing against Benzema, it's not just the centre-halves that need to be aware, it's the holding midfield player, because he drifts into wide areas, he drifts a little bit deeper. So that player has to be aware of Benzema making those runs into the box.
Well, Robert, both you and I worked on that FA Cup final that Liverpool won. I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold, even though he cops a lot of press saying that he doesn't defend, and even when he was being picked for England's team, everyone said he gives that X factor because he's someone that goes forward, and now that's celebrated more than your average defender that does defend. So which Trent will we get, you think? Or which Trent's needed?
The only Trent you're going to get is the one that wants to go forward. And he's brilliant going forward. He can pick out long passes. He can cross the ball into the box. He plays round pressure. But when I watch him, he doesn't realise danger. He's not interested in the danger behind him. And nor is Klopp, because he's got his right-sided centre-half to deal with that. He must see that Trent Alexander-Arnold doesn't defend well enough. But he lets him do it. So he wants him to be the attacking player. And it's how Real Madrid cope with that.
Any other matchups you guys are looking forward to?
Well, I suppose, again, Mane up against Carvajal, or it could be Diaz against Carvajal. Carvajal, they play on opposite sides, Real Madrid. Vinicius Junior gives width on the left-hand side, and Mendy comes infield to make forward runs.
Love how you made it. He's been in France only for a couple of hours. Mondi.
and Carvajal likes to make overlapping runs, and probably Valverde will be the player that goes infield. So whoever plays on the left-hand side might, again, be able to get in behind Carvajal. There's some great matchups all over the pitch.
Guy, which matchup will steal your narrative?
For me, I'll be interested in to see what Luka Modric does, because obviously he moves around, he picks those spots. No Fabinho in there for Liverpool. This is obviously, I'm assuming Jordan Henderson will be in that role. This is a huge game for him. Also with Thiago Alcantara, probably not fully fit. He may start, he may not. You just always have to be aware of Modric, because you don't see him and then he goes in the right position and he does something special.
Gav's just made a great point there, because what will happen, the holding midfield player, probably Henderson, will be attracted over to Vinicius Junior, because every time he runs with the ball, he wants to come in on his right foot, and that's where Henderson will be. Well, who plays on the right-hand side of a midfield three? It's Modric. So Henderson can't be in the same place at the same time. Oh, sorry, two places at the same time.
Well, we can't be in France, and specifically in this city in Paris, without talking about Kylian Mbappe. I hope you guys are not tired of talking about him. He has stolen the headlines, of course, this week, as everyone knows, when he made a decision to commit his future to PSG and not go to Real Madrid. We know that Real Madrid are feeling, Gab, a bit hurt by it, even though they keep trying to act like they're not. They're trying to bat it away, remove themselves from this. But could this possibly help them going into the final, or harm them some way?
You know, I think Real Madrid as a club, obviously, they felt that he had given his word. And now they have to scramble, and they have to scramble in the transfer window, and they have to find solutions. I don't know to what degree it generally affects the players, because Kylian Mbappe wasn't going to be playing for Real Madrid in this final anyway. These are the players who got there. Certainly Benzema, I'm sure, who lobbied hard for Mbappe, I'm sure he's disappointed. But, you know, this isn't Benzema's first rodeo.
Yeah.
He knows what he needs to do. He knows that Mbappe would have been something for next season. And I think they're ready to move past that.
Robert, what do you think? Of course, being as a player, do you think that this could somehow galvanize Real Madrid going into this, kind of put out an extra big performance to show that, look, we're all right, and maybe we didn't really need him after all?
I don't think it will.
Gav's not buying it.
They don't need to do that.
It won't have any effect on the players whatsoever. You know, where Mbappe would probably come into the side would have been on the right-hand side. They've played Asensio there, Rodrigo there, Valverde there. They'll be happy for this game because they know they're going to play. But over the course, you know, they're not going to worry about Mbappe not coming or coming.
Gav's face.
No, I honestly think the players are so... Look, this Real Madrid side, I mean, think about what they did. The comeback against Paris Saint-Germain, the comeback against Chelsea, the comeback against Manchester City. I don't want to say they're Destiny's team. It does feel like that a little bit in some ways.
Yeah.
But they're unflustered, they're unruffled, they're always calm when they're down. I don't think they're going to be affected at all by
Mbappe. And the reason they are unflustered, calm, when they are down is because of your man Carlo Ancelotti. This season, he's got his team to play in a style that he wants them to play. He's let the players go and express themselves.
Yeah.
I think the tactics have developed and then he's kept them going. He's done a magnificent job with a team we thought at the beginning of the season wouldn't stand a chance against Atletico Madrid.
Well, earlier on, Robbo and I had a little chat about who Real Madrid could probably go after to replace Mbappe as their target. And I kid you not, Robbo said that certain Mo Salah would be the perfect replacement. Gab, let me hit you up on that one first, because we know Mo Salah has at least today made some comments saying that he can guarantee he will be there or see out his contract for the next season. He has a year left at Liverpool, and then after we'll see what happens. Mo Salah to Liverpool, to Real Madrid, of course.
Is he going everywhere?
He's going everywhere. Who wouldn't want him, though, right?
Well, look, I think if you leave out what he said today, just pure hypothetical, he makes, I think, in many ways, a ton of sense because it's not going to be an enormous fee because he only has a year left on his contract. Mm. He's 30 years old. If it's a 3-4 year contract, he looks after himself. Then it's almost like a perfect match. Salah on the right, Vinicius on the left. So I think that's why these things come up. Now, it's interesting. He said, well, I'm staying. I'm going to see out my contract. Obviously, he hasn't extended with Liverpool. At some point in the back of Liverpool's mind, you know, could things also turn around where they look around and say, all right, well, if he doesn't extend his contract and he leaves us for nothing, are we better off perhaps ushering him out the door in the nicest possible way if he doesn't extend?
For a fee.
For a fee, obviously. And obviously, you know, they've got Jota, they've got Luis Diaz they've brought on board. So it's an interesting dynamic there. I think if I were Salah, of course, I would plan on staying until the... And if anything, have the narrative being, no, it's the club we're trying to sell me, if anything, if I'm not going to extend.
But what are you hearing? Are there actually any truth to the rumors that he is Madrid's next target?
Inevitably, Real Madrid are sitting there in a room. They're drawing things up. One big call they have to make is, do we go with somebody young? Because obviously, you've got Benzema and Salah. Both are going to be over 30. So, you know, do we go into almost like a slight rebuild mode? Because they are going to spend a lot of money. The difficult thing for them is they've been saving up for Mbappe all these years. You know, this lack of big signings, which have annoyed Madridismo. This is the summer where they were going to go and chuck the money out there. So you would go for a young player. Haaland's obviously gone. Mm-hmm. You've got a decision to make. But I'm not surprised that, you know, it's in both clubs' interest to keep all solid talk to one side until after this final. I think after that, who knows?
Robbo, you're a fan of this.
Absolutely, because we were talking earlier, and say Benzema gets injured after three games. You buy a key player. It's got to be a player that can do two jobs. He's got to play wide, and he's also got to play as a centre forward.
And Salah can do that.
None of the other players that we've been talking about, and sort of people have been talking about, like Haaland, he can't play out wide. He's a centre forward. Salah is the only player, I think, out of all the players we've talked about, who can play in a wide area. And lovely, he's on the right-hand side where they haven't got their best player. And if Benzema got injured or wasn't playing particularly well, they can always stick him through the middle. So it seems an ideal proposition for me.
Well, sticking with Salah, we saw, of course, how his recent comments as well made headlines. The fact that he said that there's some revenge probably to be had. He does have a bone to pick with Real Madrid, especially in the Champions League. Robbo, does this motivation kind of work?
It's a few years ago now, and the player that did it isn't playing anymore, so yeah. I don't think it has. I mean, he just want to play as well as he can, and I would say in the last 3 or 4 weeks he hasn't looked at his very best. So he wants to have a good game. He wants to go and score goals, and he's going to be up against Mendy, so it's going to be an interesting battle. Mendy likes to get forward. Salah's going to keep running in through that inside left position or inside right position. It's going to cause him lots of problems. He'll have a good game.
Gab, revenge.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, people motivate themselves in different ways. You just look at Mo Salah. He seems like such a nice guy. Mm. He's generally smiley with a curly hair.
Just like yourself, really.
Exactly. whatever he needs internally, I think he's going to get. I think more relevant is going to be, the question is, how fit is he going to be? Obviously, he's had fitness issues. He's come off the bench. I think Klopp has tried to preserve him. You know, he has obviously scored some goals even while not fit. I think the single biggest thing that he's going to be focusing on is how can I be 100% for this final, because I can be one of the difference makers for Liverpool.
And talking about Liverpool just on a whole, we saw how the Premier League title race went down to the last match of the season. There were moments where Liverpool pretty much thought that they did have it, and then they just had it taken from their hands there as Manchester City won. Does that help? Does that motivate them probably even more to win this one?
This is a one-off game. They've won two cups. I think they probably went into the last game not thinking they were going to win the Premier League. This is everything they're focusing on now. This is a massive game. They want to win this tournament. They've been brilliant throughout the tournament. They've been brilliant throughout the season. Can they just muster up that energy, that effort, those tactical understanding? One more game. That's what they're looking to do.
Cam?
I I think this has been the priority. I think, you know, you look at some of the choices against Aston Villa, you know, when he made those eight changes after the FA Cup final. I think it's been pretty obvious. You know, Klopp realizes his players are not machines. They've played every game. They will have played every game that they could possibly play in a season. They've had injuries. This is the biggest prize in football, and they knew that they were behind. Had they been in the lead, he might have made different choices in the Premier League, because obviously Premier League is so important to Liverpool fans. But at this stage, you know, I think it was evident that all the eggs are in the Champions League basket.
All right, well, I think I heard somebody yelling from afar. It might be Dan Thomas, because he doesn't like when we steal too much of his camera time. So, Dan, we're going to go back to you.
There will be a lot more from Alexis and the guys in Paris throughout the week. Be sure to check us out here on ESPN FC. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Ian Dart was asked to name his worst 11 of the Premier League season. Marcus Rashford, Lukaku, Lacazette make up his front three. Pogba, Kante and Bruno Fernandes in midfield. And then Junior Firpo, Harry Maguire, Rafael Varane, Juan Bissaka the defence, and Kepa is the goalkeeper.
I'm a little confused. Kepa's a substitute.
He didn't really have... Well,
he missed a penalty. I mean, you can't blame a goalkeeper for that.
Yeah.
Ian's not here, is he?
No, he's not here, so we have to be careful not to be
God
too...
God bless him.
Kante? Like...
Well, N'Golo Kante had an injury-ravaged season in and out. I don't think he was that bad. Bruno Fernandes really annoyed me at times with his petulance, but he got 10 league goals.
Yeah.
He wasn't the worst. And then Lacazette's problem was... And this might sound a little silly. Lacazette didn't get the goals, but some of his performances, the other parts of his game, particularly after Aubameyang left, were actually quite good.
Sure.
His link-up play, his build-up play. He didn't get his quota of goals that obviously was needed, and then he was out of the team at the end. I don't know. It's a little... I mean, Rafael Varane had a difficult season, but there's been worse centre-halves, and he did have injuries.
Well, let's welcome in, shall we?
That's as nice as I can be.
Julien Leroy is here from Paris as well. What are we talking? We're talking four Frenchmen here, Jules, in the worst 11?
Yeah, four too many. I mean, clearly, Ian Dowd didn't really understand, I think, the whole exercise. Maybe those players disappointed him during the season, which I can understand some of them. We can say that they were disappointing in some of the performances. But is that the worst 11 in the Premier League this season? No way. I mean, the boy said Kepa. Kepa never played. So how can he be the worst goalkeeper when the guy has never played? Kante has had injuries. Pogba has injuries. Bruno Fernandes still has the third highest key passes per game in the whole season. I think he was the second creating the most chances all season. How can he be the worst? I mean, this is bad. I mean, this is really bad 11. Maybe the label was wrong, but certainly not the worst 11.
I mean, you think about people like, you know, he's got Lacazette in there. Rashford didn't have a good season. You think about people like Jadon Sancho. You know, Jadon Sancho. I mean, I'll go as far to say even he's not getting in the worst 11, but Jack Grealish wasn't brilliant for City. Well, he didn't reach the expectations. That's not going to put him in that 11, but it seems that anything's been possible here. I don't know. We need to get Ian. We need to get hold of
such
him.
Such was Jules' outrage about Ian's 11 that we said, right then, Jules, put your money where your mouth is and give us your worst 11. Do you have it to hand, Jules? Do you remember who you put?
Yeah, I do remember. I mean, to be fair, if he's the worst 11, And no offense to Norwich, but they were the worst team in the league.
Yes.
So you need Norwich players in there. if he's the worst 11, so Krul is in goal. Billy Gilmour, who I think a lot of us expected more and better. It might not all be his fault, but he had a terrible season, let's be honest. I kept some of Ian's players because I didn't want to be too brutal. And I just wanted to be a bit kind to him. But I could clearly have literally taken out all his 11s and start with a new one. I think Maguire deserves to be there because he really had a tough time. And again, not all to his fault. I think the context and the environment at United was just not helping anyone. But I put Dele Alli there because I'm not sure he's still a footballer, but he was actually being paid by a Premier League club, so he has to be among the worst 11. And Timo Werner, because the only goal he scored were against the same team in one game through the whole season, so he deserves to be there too. And so did Wout Weghorst, who was signed by Burnley to keep them up, and instead he would be in the Championship next season.
He looked really good, Weghorst, for the first couple of games, and then it did look at the time, well, Wood to Newcastle and Weghorst in, he looked a handful right off the back of the signing when he moved in, and then that was it. Michael Keane, that Everton back line, but he's made so many mistakes.
Yeah,
it's been incredible. It's hard to argue with most of those players. I think there's an argument for Luke Shaw as well, if I've been quite frank with you. I think for a guy as talented as he is, and he is a talent and he's a powerhouse, he kind of seems soft to me.
Sure.
You know, whenever I see him play, it's almost as if he doesn't want to be there. But yeah.
Whose would you suggest was the better of the worst 11?
Well, I think it's he's not here, but it's safe to say Jules is a bit more. There seems to be a bit more rationale behind Jules, i.e. these players have actually played badly for a starter.
Well, one thing you, of course, seem to both agree on is that Harry Maguire deserves a place in this 11, and it's interesting to see the discussions around his future and his role at Manchester United. This is what Rob Dawson has written over on ESPN AFC. Talking about the captaincy problem, all eyes will also be on how Ten Hag handles the captaincy, according to sources, with the squad split over whether Harry Maguire, who had a poor season, and should continue with the armband. David De Gea, Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo among the candidates to take over. Sources have told ESPN that Maguire, a regular since arriving from Leicester in 2019, is not even guaranteed to start under the new boss because of his lack of pace and Ten Hag's tendency to play with a high defensive line.
Yeah, well, just off the back of this, I'm going to say, and I know whoever's a captain of a club the size United is usually a talking point. But I'm going to tell you now where I'm coming from here. Nobody at that football club, after the performances that they've put in, particularly this season, but even over a longer period, those that have been there, none of those players should be concerned an iota about being captain of Manchester United. They all should be concerned about their place in the team and their longevity at the club. And I think once you show that leadership, once you show that desire, and once Ten Hag realises that he has X, Y and Z on side, only then, I think, is the captaincy important. But all those players mentioned.
But you could, like, David De Gea is the anomaly, isn't he?
Oh, sorry, I'm discounting a goalkeeper.
You don't want a goalkeeper as
your captain. I know Hugo Lloris has been captain at Spurs and stuff. But no, I'm thinking more outfield players here. I'm just thinking more outfield players.
Right.
And quite frankly, all of them, David De Gea has been brilliant, of course he has. All of them, I think, are looking at more important roles, and that is, can I be a lot better than I have been? Not if I'm going to be Manchester United captain. I think that's the least of their concerns, particularly with a new manager coming in. Whenever a new manager come into a club that I was at, you're always thinking, right, things have been going sweetly, but does he see it differently?
Right.
Whereas now at Man United, things have been going dreadfully. How can I put it right? So I think Ten Hag will have his own idea of what he wants. And I got a feeling the captain will come from a player that he probably brings in.
Harry Maguire has been very much the poster boy of everything that's been wrong with Manchester United, it seems. He seems to be at the top of the tree for all the criticism.
Well, I don't know if there's any media leaks in Manchester about what he's doing and stuff. So I don't know if that's one of the reasons that he seems to be getting more headlines. I don't know if it's the booing at Wembley from England fans, which I didn't agree with because his performances for England have been pretty good, to be honest. Mm. but he has been really poor at United.
Can he get better?
I think he can get better. Don't forget, this is the player that Guardiola tried to sign for Man City. Now, he's trending downwards big time. It depends what Ten Hag wants. Has he got the ability? Yes. Can he pass the ball? Yes. Can he defend? Yes. He can do all those things. That's why he's got to where he's got. But he has to keep his head down, forget about the media, forget about the press conferences, start making better decisions on the field, defensively, and even without a captaincy, showing the leadership.
Right.
If he does that, he's got half a chance. I mean, half a chance. If he doesn't, Ten Hag will just out him.
Can he play in a Ten Hag system, Jules?
It's a good question. I mean, Daley Blind was a key player for Ten Hag at Ajax, and Daley Blind is nowhere near as quick as Usain Bolt, for example. So I understand the whole question mark around the pace of Maguire, especially if the defensive line is really, really high. But maybe at the beginning, Ten Hag would play with a medium block where the pace for the two centre-backs, or at least for one of the centre-backs, might not be an issue. So we will have to see. The fact is, we're still not really sure exactly, and I'm not sure Ten Hag himself knows how he'll play, because he doesn't know exactly the players that he will have in his squad. There's some current ones, and I would expect a few of them to be on the transfer market and to be ready to be sold. And then there's a lot that will come as well. So there might be a place for him, and I agree with Craig. There's enough talent in Harry Maguire to at least have a chance to play. But there's a lot of things that he didn't do well this season. Not all of his fault. I think the context around him and the team was really toxic at times, which clearly he struggled with. But he will also have to play much better than what we've seen if he wants Ten Hag to give him a key role in that team.
I think he needs to get his... I think first and foremost, he really needs to get his head screwed on and get it back in the zone. Moving to Man United or any big club can always sort of bolster your ego in some sense. Some people don't operate that way, others do. Some do it, some do it subconsciously. Let's not forget, he's had the big move, he's had the what you would call success with England getting to finals, but he's also had his problems before that, going on holiday and getting himself in trouble.
Sure.
In Greece. And these things are a distraction. You know, I know there's other things at Man United with some of the players with their off-field things, but these things are a distraction, and they're a distraction that people can throw mud at when you're not playing well. But it's an amazing how badly a player you become in such a short period of time in the eyes of some. I'll go back to it. At Leicester City, he was at the time, certainly in England, one of the more vaunted centre-backs. He's had an extremely troublesome period with his club, not with his country. And it's down to how he reacts. The reaction I've seen so far hasn't been good enough. He has smarted at the criticism. He hasn't liked it. He hasn't handled it particularly well. But here's the deal. When you're at that level and you're performing in that manner and you have that price tag, it's coming.
Right.
It's coming to you at Manchester United unless you're successful.
United, of course, will be in the Europa League next season. They just missed out, didn't they, on a place in the Europa Conference League because of West Ham failing to register a victory. And today saw the first ever final of the Europa Conference League, and it was won by Roma, beating Feyenoord by 1-0.
And Mourinho will call this one of his greatest ever successes.
Of course he will. Five European finals for Jose Mourinho. Look at that picture. And five victories. No matter what you think of this competition, that is an impressive record. He was so happy, so delighted at the end of this game, Jules. For those who didn't see it, how was it?
It wasn't great. I think it was the game that we expected, in the sense that Roma were too happy to leave the ball to Feyenoord, who are a really good team. They're very entertaining. They play with a lot of intensity. They have a lot of young players. Luis Sinisterra has been their star this season. He's been fantastic. The problem is, if they have the ball but the movement isn't there, or they play against a block that is well compact, well organized, well drilled, then they struggle to create anything. And that's exactly what we saw tonight. They had a lot of the ball. Sinisterra was well marked and could not really express himself well, and they struggled to create much. And yes, they had a few shots on target, and Rui Patricio was really vigilant in goal for Roma. But that was too easy, I thought, to defend for Roma. And then one great ball by Mancini, one little mistake by the Feyenoord centre-back, and then Zaniolo is through. Great first touch, great finish. Maybe the keeper should have done a bit better or could have done a bit better. And then once Roma were 1-0 up, you could almost turn your TV off and you knew they had the game and they were never going to let it go then. And this is a very Mourinho-esque performance, I thought, in the sense that they did what they had to do and that was it. No need for more. They didn't do less and they won it. And it'd be the first time ever to have won all the European Cups. And I think, you know, he deserves a lot of credit as well.
Thank you very much, Jules. It's been a busy few days, hasn't it, for Jules? Be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast, where he breaks down pretty much all the mechanics of that Kylian Mbappe decision to stay at PSG.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you can see Gav dragging everybody around the streets of Paris trying to find a fine Italian at the moment. It is, of course, the city that will host the Champions League final this weekend. Julien Laurent will be there for us. Jules, still with us now.
How come we're not there? Budgets.
Budgets, I think. Yeah.
must try harder next year.
I think so. Jules, a lot of discussion about the future of Neymar. Lequipe saying that PSG would be more than happy to get rid of him over the summer, but finding a suitor is a completely different matter.
Yeah, that's right. We were briefed the same story that we will have on the website very soon, in the sense that despite giving him a new contract, really just not a long time ago, last season, a year ago, let's say, more or less, they don't want him out, but I think they would be happy to let him go. They clearly have turned a corner, which we explained the other night on the show, in the sense that they want something a bit different now. They want less bling, they want more younger players, maybe more French players as well. And they don't really think that Neymar fits in this sort of new structure with a new manager and a new sporting director in Luis Campos. So for that, I think they've opened the door for a transfer. But like you said, Dan, the problem is who is going to come for Neymar right now? Mm. One, he's got a huge wages, of course, huge contract, 35 million euros net a year is a lot of money for any club in the world. But only a few can pay that, can afford that. There's a transfer fee, of course, that they will have to pay. I don't think PSG would be too greedy because they want to get rid of Neymar. But still, that's on top of the wages. And then he's 30. And then last season was certainly one of the most difficult that he had, not just since he moved to Paris in the summer 2017, but I think in his whole career in terms of injuries. He had another long layoff, 2.5 months, in terms of numbers, even if he finished the season a bit better than the way he started. But it's been very difficult for him. So I don't think there'd be many suitors, no.
Now, this opens the door to a discussion that we were talking about with Mbappe staying. Mm-hmm. How does that affect the dynamic in the dressing room between these two now? Because surely Neymar's going, can't you just have a word? Well, why are you trying to get rid of me to Mbappe, given this so-called power that he has?
I don't think I'm not sure he's got that much power. You know, we're talking finances here.
If Mbappe wanted to keep Neymar, then surely, from what we understand, he could have a word with somebody to say, wait, don't get rid of him.
This is a very complex situation. I don't know. I mean, I've seen dynamics in dressing rooms before, but as I say, I've been in quite a few dressing rooms for numerous years, both at club level and international level, and I've never seen a player wield that much power.
Right.
Never, ever, ever, because you can't. And I know there's going to be a change of manager at PSG, and there's been a change above that as well, but you can't diminish the head coach manager's position so much that's kind of where you're leaving yourself with a player. I think the bottom line here is Neymar is, as Jill's pointed out, is where's the exit strategy? Where's that going to be? To who? To which big club? Because it's only going to be a big club that can pay those wages, otherwise he has to take a huge drop. That's probably not going to happen. But it's interesting that PSG, as Jill's pointed out, are almost admitting that the Harlem Globetrotter sort of approach is just not working, and two, it's got no longevity.
Right.
So, but I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be a hard egg to be able to chase out of there, isn't he? Neymar, for sure. But they give him the contract, so they're going to have to figure something out. But I get a feeling, why wouldn't he just sit tight? Why wouldn't he just sit tight unless he's got something else that comes up that's very appealing?
Jules, we saw in that L'Equipe article talking about the relationship between Mbappe and Neymar. Of course, when he first arrived from Monaco, it looked like they were best buds. What's happened?
No, I think they're still close, and I don't think, to go back to the discussion you just had with Greg, I don't think Kylian has any word to say about Neymar's future. I don't think it would be a problem if Neymar stays for Mbappe. I don't think it's a problem if Neymar leaves either. It's very much the direction that the club is taking right now, saying, listen, he's 30 now. Yeah, we gave him a new deal, a big deal, by the way, up until June 2025, with an extra year, with a possible extra year as well on top of that, so 2026. And that was a mistake, because the way we're going now is a very different way. Like we said, younger players, more French players, and we will talk about Tchouaméni after that. So there's not really room for him in a way. But the problem, as we said, is that I think they can be room just for one superstar now. Messi is the superstar of all. Of course, he's the greatest of all time. But this is towards the end of his career. Neymar is not near the end of his career. He's only 30, turned 30 in February. But there's clearly, certainly at the club, a feeling that, okay, Messi, of course, has one more year and he has to be there. And he would be the poster boy, of course. But Mbappe is the project. He's the face of the project. And they don't believe there's room for Neymar next to him or with a second role, if you want, which, like you said, in 2017 was the other way around. Neymar was the big guy and Kylian, the upcoming superstar, in the second role. That has shifted massively. And I don't know. I think there's more in Neymar than what we've seen in the last 2 years, for example. Can he recover that form? Can he be again one of the best? I'm not sure. I think there's certainly more. And there's a World Cup to be played. And for him, the objective won't be anything more than being on top form for mid-November when he's going to join Brazil to go to Qatar. That's what he's got in mind now. And if you change club in the summer, that's going to be a bit difficult. You need to adapt again. That's why also he doesn't want to leave. But it reminds me of the James Rodriguez issue that Real Madrid had, for example. What do you do with him at the time with the huge wages and the big image and the big name, etc.? And they struggled. And I think PSG will struggle with Neymar because it's a James Temptine situation.
I think one of the things is with these scenarios, and I doubt this will happen here, but I have seen it happen. It depends on the relationship that he's got with everybody around him at the club, particularly those making the decisions, and how much they want to get him out. And the World Cup, sometimes, or a major championship, can be a great stick to beat a player with.
Yeah.
Now, it would be a huge financial hit, but if the relationship becomes untenable between player and club, they could sit him out for the whole period between the start of the season and the World Cup. And that's basically going to kibosh his World Cup. Now, that's strong-arm tactics, but I have seen that before. It doesn't look to me as if we're anywhere near that stage. But I suppose when push comes to shove and it becomes a power battle with a World Cup around the corner as a player, you have to start making decisions. I doubt that will happen, but if PSG want to play some strong-arm tactics, they can actually use this World Cup been less than 6 months into a season.
Following that narrative and maybe shifting their goals, obviously, Tchouaméni ticks a lot of boxes for PSG. We reported yesterday, heavily linked, of course, to a move to Real Madrid. Jules, for those who haven't seen him play, who haven't seen Monaco, what is it about this player that is so exciting, and what sort of role does he play on the pitch?
He's just a perfect modern midfielder in the sense that he's still very young. He's only 22, so there's a lot of things to improve in his game. There's loads of room for improvement. He came from Bordeaux to Monaco, where he struggled at the beginning, and then really became one of the best midfielders in Ligue 1, if not the best even this season. So there's just nothing he cannot do. He can play as a lone six, as a holding midfielder, but you will restrict him, really, if you play in that position, but he can do it because he's so intelligent. But really, I think the best is to let him have a bit of freedom. He could be that box-to-box at that number eight. Again, help you defend in a double pivot, play in the midfield three as well on one of the two sides of the holding midfielder, and go up and down the pitch. He's got that physical strength. He's good on the ball. He's been scoring goals this season. I think he's got 6 in Ligue 1 this season, plus a few assists as well. So he's added that to his game all around. He's a wonderful talent, a great, really, really one for now, but also for 10 years to come, really. So wherever he goes, and Real Madrid are still very much the favourite, PSG trying to hijack the deal, but I think they're way behind, really, at the moment, certainly. But if Real Madrid can sign him, it would be a hell of a signing, for sure.
I was going to say, has he got more to his game than Camavinga, Jules?
So they're, in a way, they're similar, Craig, but also very different. I think Camavinga likes to have a deeper role where he can use his long-range passing, for example, as we saw in the Champions League, where Tchouaméni is more that sort of... I mean, they're both very physical, but Tchouaméni is a bit stronger physically to drive the ball up more than the Camavinga has done this season, for example. But I think you can easily play them both together and they would bust any midfield in the world.
French annoy you, don't they?
I think you need to maybe expand
well,
on that.
Well, they
point.
Keep producing all these very good young players.
Yes.
They do.
Yeah.
I mean, those two go
incredible.
I mean, we thought Camavinga was going to go to PSG, he goes to Real Madrid. Obviously, yeah. Real Madrid are sniffing about this lad as well. But they just seem to have that conveyor belt of quality,
exactly.
Quality youngsters.
And Nkunku coming through as well up front. Yep. It's just, mate, Jules is loving it.
Yeah, I mean,
Jules, your hair seems a bit different in France. Does something happen when you go for the Channel Tunnel?
Well, am I more handsome?
Let's
I'm often more handsome when I come home, you know.
Well, really, it depends who you're socialising with. Next to Gab, you're an oil painting. Thank you very much, Jules. Just a reminder to follow all the transfer news over the summer. And look, you can see a lot more of Gab as well. Be sure to check out the Transfer Talk website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Look a little brighter now in Paris, isn't it? This is recorded earlier on in the day. We heard more from Alexis and the boys.
Thanks, Dan. And yeah, thank goodness we have Gabriele Marcotti because he can call his friends in high places. We begged him to call them, and now they've turned on the Eiffel Tower for us, Gab. Thank you.
Emmanuel picked up at the second ring.
And he said, we're shooting a show. We need the Eiffel Tower lit up. And it is lit, literally. Something else that we're thankful we have Gab for, as the boys were talking about, Chelsea, the sale has finally been approved. Give us more details on that, Gab.
Well, look, the numbers have been out there for a long time. It's £2.5 billion, round about $3 billion, plus a whole bunch of other commitments. A commitment to invest about £1.75 billion over the next decade, which is close to, again, just over $2 billion. It's a commitment not to, some people put it, pull a Glazer and kind of then load, borrow against the value of the club and load debt onto the club. It's a commitment to redevelop Stamford Bridge. I think all of those things are really good news for Chelsea fans. Best news of all, though, now they can start operating. Their license has been restored, which means they will be in the Premier League. They'll be in the Champions League. They can start selling season tickets. They can start offering new contracts to players, and they can start buying and selling players. Kind of do the things a normal club does.
As you can say, that is one of the top things, that they can finally start looking just in time for the summer transfer window to sign new players and bolster that squad. Someone that we're hearing is their next target is a name that we're familiar with as well. Jules Koundé from Sevilla. Is he the top target for Chelsea? What are you hearing?
You know what? They've been after Koundé for so long, going back to last year. I think clearly he's in the mix. The reason they were attracted to him in the first place is that, you know, he's seen as ideal playing in a back three. He's not the tallest defender, but he's very, very mobile. So I would imagine that would be one of the first things they try to get done. They couldn't get it done last year for a variety of reasons. I think at this point they've cleared salary space with Rudiger going, with Christensen going. So I think at that stage, that's going to be something that they're going to want to do.
And I mean, just talking about Koundé, Robbo, of course, earlier on in La Liga season, I got to go to Sevilla, got to speak to the president of Sevilla. He spoke a lot about the rumors surrounding Koundé and said how happy he was that they managed to keep on to him because he's such a quality player. He's someone they want to hold on to. What do you think of him as a player and how he probably might fit at Chelsea?
Well, Gab's just said it. He's the modern-day defender. If you play with a back three, he's not the biggest player, but he's got pace. He's got good spring as well, so when balls are crossed to the far post, he can still defend those. When he makes interceptions, he can still go forward and carry on his run and build up the play. He's good on the ball, quite calm on the ball. He's got a feisty side to him as well. He's not frightened to get stuck into tackles, which he might have to curb if he came to the Premier League.
Like a Stevie Nicol?
A little bit like a Stevie Nicol. Better looking than Stevie Nicol, but anyway.
I didn't say it, Stevie.
In terms of a right-sided centre-half, he's an excellent player. It means, you know, that they can play the right player at right wing-back. You know.
Is he someone that Chelsea need now?
Well, I think inevitably they're down two centre-backs in Christensen and Rudiger. We don't know the future of Azpilicueta. Thiago Silva sticking around another season, but, you know, he's not getting any younger. He's phenomenal as he is. He's going to be, what, 36, 37? They like Chalaba. They've got other players, who players they sent out alone, players that they have buyback clauses on. But I think, you know, you need to start thinking of the Chelsea defence of the future. It's very important to Tuchel. So I think he's just a crucial building block.
Bringing up front now, talking about some attacking players at Chelsea, we do know they have a lot of names, that I think we all got excited about when they were signed, and then now, looking back at it, maybe not have had the impact that we expected them to have. Robbo, which of their attacking players do you think are better being let go?
Well, there's none of them that I would say have done particularly well. We've talked about Kai Havertz. You know, I think he's not really a centre forward. I think he's a number 10. He can drift into games, but I don't think he's a dominant centre forward. Timo Werner, over the couple of years he's been at the club, just hasn't done enough. He's not made enough runs in behind. He looks like he's lost a bit of pace. He's lost confidence, that's for sure. And he hasn't made good decisions.
He's in a better headspace now.
Yeah, he might be for a couple of games, but he hasn't played well enough over the period. And of course, the player that I thought would be the leading goal scorer last season, Lukaku, whether it hasn't been the right formation or tactics for him, because at Inter he was absolutely magnificent and he touched the ball so many times. At Chelsea, it hasn't quite worked out. But Tuchel's got to work with him and make him that player again that he was at Inter.
He's been tinkering with his front three all season long, right? I mean, though the one guy who's sure to be there is Mason Mount.
Yeah.
And then it's been about finding the right partner. I think they have a lot of players that just don't fit his system. If he's committed, and I wouldn't take this as red, by the way. You know, he hasn't always played a back three.
No.
He could opt for a back four. I mean, especially in the past, it's like his base formation. Then maybe you start thinking about wingers coming into play. Maybe Callum Hudson-Odoi. Maybe Pulisic is better in a wide area in a 4-3-3. Maybe there's other opportunities there. But if he's going to keep some variation of this system with Mount and two other guys, then some of these people simply are square pegs in round holes. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's Ziyech, who's a phenomenal footballer, whether it's Pulisic, whether it's Hudson-Odoi, it's difficult for these guys.
And going to Ziyech, he's a player that I feel a bit sorry for. I saw him in a couple of cup games when they for, and he played almost like the Mahrez role for Man City, playing out on the right-hand side. He delivered pass after pass, cross after cross in the box. He was by far and away their best player, but the next time they changed to a back three, he's out the side.
Well, in terms of Timo Werner, though, because that seems to be the top name on everyone's list, Gav's already giving me the eyes. No, I'm just asking, because when Thomas Tuchel came in, everyone thought it was a match made in heaven. Everyone thought that this is a man to get the best out of Timo Werner. You're surprised that it's not happened?
But on what basis? I mean, I've read so many things like, oh, because the German-speaking players will respond better to Tuchel. They all speak English. What is this nonsense? I mean, look,
they
culturally
understand each other, maybe.
If you can get... Look,
he's never... You get on with the Italian journalist, because you're part Italian. There we are.
He never worked with Timo Werner before.
Yeah.
And on paper, if you get the Leipzig Timo Werner, of course it's going to be, who wouldn't want that, right? But for whatever reason, it's been 2 years. He's had issues. He's on a big salary, so I think he's difficult to shift as well. So sure, you hope that, you know, next season will be the season that he comes good, because it's very difficult to move him on.
Well, let's talk about AC Milan, shall we, Gab, since we're going to big up some Italians. Yeah. Oh, Like that little segue. Look at his little smiley face. Was he? You weren't out there celebrating with Zlatan in the trophy parade?
I was now celebrating from a distance.
Celebrating from a distance. Rafael Leao, let's talk about him. He seems to be a hot target, being linked as well with Real Madrid. Tell us more about him.
Well, I mean, look, when you've got a whole bunch of young players who are good and talented, they will be linked with other teams. Rafael Leao was on the wing. I think his skill set was obvious. I think this is the season where it really, probably about halfway through the season, it really started coming together. He scored some important goals. He's incredibly unselfish as well. He set up a lot of goals. And, you know, he's got pace, he's got dribbling ability, he's got unpredictability. And I think that's why people have been excited about him, really since his days at Lille, when he was the hottest prospect on the team.
To Real Madrid, does that make sense?
I'm not sure he's at that level yet, but he's a bit like Vinicius Jr. in certain ways, because Vinicius Jr., 2 years ago, or not last season, the season before, made all the wrong decisions. He had great pace, went past people. Leao does a lot of good things, but every so often his final ball, his final decision hasn't been quite good enough. If he can match that to his general build-up play and his pace and his ability to go past people, he'll be a top-class player.
Gab, what are you hearing about this potential deal?
I think Milan's the official line from Milan is we want to hang on to all our best players, right? They're already losing Fran Kessi, who has not extended his contract, is going to Barcelona. But equally, and there are other things in the background because the club is up for sale as well. They're negotiating with different parties. So that could all change again. But I think their attitude is we bought these youngsters, and if the price comes along and it's the right price, you know, these guys are the type of people who think that, you know, there's no bad assets, only bad prices, and there's no good assets, but only good prices. So if
could
they
offer... explain that again?
Basically what it means is if you offer... enough money, if you offer more money for Leao than Milan think that Leao is worth, and they think they can get a replacement, I think they'd be ready to pull the trigger. So I think he's in the mix. And I think this is true for most Milan players. Doesn't mean he's definitely going to go, Milan fans. Chill out, okay? Because they also think if he continues developing like this, in a year's two's time, he could be one of the top players in the world.
Well, if we want to bring out another big smile from Gab Marcotti, then we have to talk about Mario Balotelli. Remember that name? Oh, Rob was about to get up and start running, but he scored not one, not two, not three, not four, but five goals in the final match day in the Turkish league, including Arabona. Gab, your boy.
It's not just Arabona, Alexis. It's Arabona after yes. 22 stepovers. It is already guaranteed to win the Puskas Award for best goal of the season. If you haven't seen it, when you're done with this, go on YouTube, check it out. Balotelli against Costepe. There's nothing like it, and this is why he is Super Mario. Now, all the haters are going to say, oh, look, you did it against a team that was already relegated on the last day of the season. But so what?
You can only beat who's in front of you.
Exactly.
And when he did those 22 stepovers, how many players did he actually beat in that? Or did he just do them for the sake of it?
He hypnotized the dude in front of him and then went past him. And then he
so he did one player with 22 stepovers.
Exactly. Mm.
Robert, when you hear us still talking about Mario Balotelli, I mean, he gets Gab so animated. As you said, Super Mario. We all, I think, have enjoyed him a couple of matches a couple of years ago. Mm. Does this case still make you scratch your head and just wonder
what could have been? Of course it does. Of course it does. I remember him playing in the European Championships against England when Italy completely dominated England. I think it was a 0-0 draw. Italy won on penalties. And he was outstanding. As the centre forward, he did everything right. He held off defenders. He linked up the play. He ran in behind. He created opportunities. He looked a top-class player. And he had his head on him. And then I saw him playing the World Cup in 2014 when they're playing Uruguay and he gets wound up by Godin and the manager has to take him off at half-time. And in the end, Italy lose to Uruguay. So there's two sides to Mario Balotelli. It's just a shame we didn't see the better side more often.
Also with that defeat, also because somebody decided to start biting the opposition. Let's not forget that, too. That happened, too,
in
that game.
We can never forget that, too. Gab, does he still make you scratch your head?
Look, he's been very open about this.
Yeah.
He said, this is the way I am. I try to do things. People, I think he's had a lot of chances. He's had a lot of opportunities. There's a reason why he's there playing in Turkey. And I say this with the greatest respect for all the Adana Demirspor's out there. I think you have to accept that. He was still hoping to get a call up, you know, to the national team, the back of his mind, World Cup. He's got to think that way. But he's 31.
Yeah.
And at some point, I think he's going to find that serenity. But by that point, his playing career may be over.
All right. Well, there you have it, guys. As is tradition, Gab Marcotti is going to take us out for a very expensive meal. And he is going to pay for it. So don't make him expensive. Thanks so much, guys.
Pleasure.
Look at the Torre Eiffel in the background. We're still waiting for the glittery lights to come on. But we'll probably get it tomorrow. In the meantime, back to you, Dad.
Thanks, Alexis. But in fact, there'll be more from Alexis and the boys in Paris on Extra Time, which you can check out over, as always, on the YouTube channel.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Fear not, more to come. Extra Time. But not from us, as we'll head back to Paris with Alexis and the boys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Extra Time, a very special edition of Extra Time.
Was that hello? Did you say hello?
Did I sound a bit English there?
You did, yes.
I think that's what happens when you live in London for 3 years now. But we are in Paris, that is the important thing. Building up for the Champions League final, Real Madrid against Liverpool. I'm here with Gab Marcotti and Stuart Robson. The Eiffel Tower is our special guest in the background, guys. So let's get some questions in, shall we? From Nadum's interior decorator.
Ooh.
For Robbo, who will be the X factor for both teams in the game on Saturday?
The X factor? Well, you can only talk about Benzema for Real Madrid because obviously he's been their star player. And when he hasn't played, Real Madrid don't look the same side. He's the player that will come off, he'll link up the play, he'll score goals, he'll play little 1-2s with Vinicius Junior, he'll defend from the front as well. So he's going to be the star man. For Liverpool, I think the star man has to be their holding midfield player, who could be Henderson. He's got to do a lot of jobs in that holding role, so he's going to be their star player. If they want to win the game, he's going to have to play well.
Wow, I didn't expect Hendo as an X-factor.
No, neither did I.
No disrespect to Hendo.
I thought I'd go slightly differently.
He loves going rogue.
All right, can I mention the two goalkeepers? Because we haven't mentioned
them.
You're right.
Once. I think they're arguably the two best goalkeepers in the world. I mean, you put Oblak in there if you like, but whatever. I think most would have him in their top three.
Oh, wow.
And for me, in one-off games, we've seen this happen time and again. A goalkeeper who stands on his head, to use some hockey parlance, can make all the difference. This can actually be all about that. And you've got two of the very best out there.
Well, because the last time these two played in the cup final, it was the goalkeeper that made a complete mess up for Liverpool, wasn't it? Carrius.
Yeah.
Loris Karius, yeah. Yeah, you, had to, bring that up. Liverpool fans have just forgotten that there's a man named Loris
Karius. But you talked about goalkeepers, you talked about the final, you talked about these two clubs. Yeah. There's the man who made the mistakes. So it's your point.
That's the difference.
He's been pumping in the gym, though. He's absolutely sore now. Have you seen him recently?
He's on the Fernando Torres
diet. On that Fernando Torres diet. Jeez. All right, let's move on. Moses Goldsmith wants to know, does the Erling Haaland transfer to Manchester City win them the quadruple next season?
No, it doesn't. You gotta go and play the games. Does it make them better? Of course it makes them better. But they won the Premier League title by a single point this season. They have a defense where everybody's injured at the end of the season, just about. Ruben Dias, Walker. Who knows what condition they're going to be in next season? Who knows? You got a whole bunch of guys with their contracts winding up. They got some big decisions to make over the summer. Fernandinho's gone. He's going to have to be replaced. I mean, all these things coming together. Guys, that's not how football works. You can't just take a great team, add a great player, and say, oh yeah, give him the quadruple.
Robbo, I already know that you're choosing Liverpool to win the title next season in our very, 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 very early predictions. But surely Haaland adds that extra.
Yeah, of course he does. Yeah, Gab's absolutely right. Of course he does add that little extra bit. But as you just said, there was games at the end of the season where, and the Real Madrid game, where Man City crumbled to a certain degree against Atletico Madrid. They were bullied in that game and could have easily gone out in the second leg. So there was just, chinks in their armour, I would say, for Man City. They're a good team. Haaland will make them better, but I think it doesn't mean they're going to win the quadruple by any means.
I was wondering, when you talked about how they got bullied, I was wondering if you're going to stray into Patrice Evra territory and talk about lack of personality, because Pep doesn't like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Michael asks, for Gab, start one, bench one, sell one. Or you can rank them best to worst. But looking at these three names, I don't even think there's a worst. Ready? Mm-hmm. Franco Baresi, Paolo Maldini, or Fabio Cannavaro. Woo!
I don't think there's a correct answer to this one.
We can't rank them from worst, because I don't think any of those names, like I said, are worst. But if you have to start one, bench one or sell one in Gab Marcotti United?
I would start Paolo Maldini. And I'll tell you why I would start Paolo Maldini. Simply because he's more handsome than Franco Baresi.
But then Fabio Cannavaro?
Not my type. No, that's not the point. No.
What is Gab's type? What is your type?
He once said to me that Alisson was the best looking goalkeeper in the world. Did you not say that?
He's very handsome.
Kevin Trapp?
Yeah. Anyway, back to your question.
We strayed. Listen,
I think you're talking about, obviously, I put Baresi and Maldini a notch above Cannavaro simply because of their technical ability on the pitch.
Okay.
And out of the three, I would put Maldini.
Who was the best leader?
You could argue it was Baresi, his sense of positioning, but then, you know, Maldini wasn't a shabby leader either.
No.
By the end, neither was Cannavaro. For me, Maldini's got the size. I think technically, he's on a par with Baresi. Baresi, his positioning, you know, was what set him apart. Oh, one of the many things that set him apart.
Yeah.
People used to say it was like he was being remote controlled by God when he was on the pitch. You know, so like, but if you're forcing me, I would start Maldini, bench Baresi, which feels like heresy.
I know.
Saying that, and sell Cannavaro, which is even worse. I wouldn't do that.
Sell Cannavaro to Tusk. Anyways, why Casa asks, which club from Italy will have the best chance to make it to the Champions League final next year? Robbo, let's start with you on that one.
Oh, the Champions League final.
Yeah.
Who's impressive? At the moment, you wouldn't say any of them because, I mean, Juventus could be better next year. They've got to rebuild. They've got a lot of players that I'm not quite sure about. Inter, I think, are a good team. But again, I think they need somebody to play up front that's slightly better than Dzeko. Milan, I don't think, are going to do it in the Champions League. They're a good side, very good side, but I don't think they've got that X factor that's going to take them to where Liverpool and Real Madrid are at the moment. So
I'm surprised you didn't pick the only club that beat one of these two finalists in their house this season and played them to a standstill at home while losing 2-0, and that's Inter.
Yeah.
For me, like, I think it's a long shot for all of them. For me, with Inter, I've been so impressed by the job Simone Inzaghi has done this season. And, you know, the fact that they could take on a team like Liverpool with no fear. If you remember that first leg, they lost 2-0 at home, but I thought they definitely had the upper hand.
I commentated on that game, and you're absolutely right, particularly in the second half. But you always felt as though Inter were having to play at 100%. The players
were
absolutely shattered come the end of the game, and Liverpool had that extra gear.
But the question is not which of these sides are better than Liverpool, because none of them are.
No.
The question is who has the best chance
to get to the final.
Simone Inzaghi, the way he can change things around in terms of his approach, the way he interprets the game, the fact, you know, for me, I think we all agree, Liverpool and Man City, 1 and 1A this season. The fact that he could go and take them on in that way, if you have to pick a side, for me, it's Inter.
Have a look at the Eiffel Tower behind us, guys. Oh,
without falling off the chairs.
Without falling off the chairs. They are a bit wobbly, but it doesn't get better than this. It's probably the best extra time you guys will get. Let's move on to the next question from Enzo. Ooh, this is a tough question. Is Kevin De Bruyne the greatest Premier League midfielder ever? Gasps in Paul Scholes, but ever. Stop it, I know.
Okay, this is where you have to. I mean, I always had a soft spot for Roy Keane as a player.
True.
You think back to those great Arsenal teams. Patrick Vieira. But they're different players. So if you talk about attacking midfielders, I struggle to, and, you know, and then football's changed a little because those great United sides, you know, it was more about 4-4-2 and a line. So, you know, you mentioned Scholes. Some people really thought he was exceptional. But, you know, what he was asked to do is very different from what Kevin De Bruyne is asked to do. For me, put all those things together, think of the longevity De Bruyne has had as well in the Premier League, I would go Kevin De Bruyne. I think that's legit.
I played against a brilliant passer of the ball in Glenn Hoddle.
You were going to say Kevin De Bruyne.
And Kevin De Bruyne can pass the ball just as well as Glenn Hoddle, but he can also run with the ball. He can make chances. He can score goals. Glenn Hoddle couldn't do that.
Glenn Hoddle had far better hair, though.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
So Kevin De Bruyne, for me, does things that no other midfield players can do at times. He picks out passes that, even when you're watching the TV, you don't always see. He's a magnificent player, probably the best midfield player in the Premier League.
Wow, fair play. I thought that got
history.
That was an easier question to answer than I thought, guys. Interesting. Oh, London's finest. Oh, this one's for me. Alexis, do you regret signing with Manchester United? I wish that I signed for them one day. But no, No, I'm sticking to my guns, guys. I'm sticking to my guns. They made me want to regret signing for them or supporting them, I suppose. But look, I ended up supporting Manchester United many moons ago because
when they were top.
Because
when they were at the
because
top.
Because Dwight York played for them and I was looking for my fellow Caribbean person. A lot of people from Jamaica support Liverpool because of John Barnes. And I wanted to be different. So I chose Dwight York. Of course, he's from Tobago. But still my fellow Caribeño. So I decided to go with him.
Couldn't support whoever Russell Latifi was playing for?
So just let me choose Yorkie, who's, by the way, a nice good friend of mine now.
What about,
so there you go.
What about Shaka? Shaka was a Carib from Trinidad and Tobago. Why not him? Why not Newcastle or West Ham or whoever else he played for?
Too much. Shaka, we couldn't keep up with you, man. Shaka was just everywhere.
He'd have given you a drive in that.
What was it? Ferrari?
Not Ferrari. What's the other Italian make?
Maserati.
Yeah.
Shaka's Maserati, guys. He used to pull up to pick up his kids at school in a Maserati. One day, if you find him, stop him, let him tell you that story. He denies it, though. He still denies
absolutely
it.
Absolutely, he does deny it.
He insists it was more of a modest car. Like
it wasn't so much the Maserati, it was the Shaka number plate on the back.
Oh, Shaka went for the Maserati and Shaka on the back. Jeez. You're right. Now that I'm looking back on this, I probably should have supported just whoever Shaka played with.
You
but then
done.
I'd end up supporting like 10 clubs.
Yeah, well, he was a good goalkeeper.
He was a great goalkeeper, Shaka. We do love you. But no, I don't regret supporting Manchester United, but they do make me want to regret supporting them. I'm not going to lie. This last season, given the resources United still have...
Where are they going to end up next season then? Where are they going to end up next season?
I would just be happy to make the Conference League next season, to be honest. Based on the level of horrendous toilet we've seen this season, I will be happy. I'll just be happy to make the Europa League again. That's what I've been reduced to. So let's move on before I start crying, guys. Saif Salim asks, question for Robbo. Now that Barcelona have signed Frank Kessie from AC Milan, what kind of profile will he bring to this Barcelona side? Can he play in that Busquets role, or is he more of an attacking midfield option for Barca?
Well, he's played in several different roles in Milan's midfield. I don't think he's an out-and-out holding midfield player because I think he's got too much quality for that. I think he's... It's difficult. I think he'll play on one side of a holding midfield player, probably on the left-hand side, because he's good on the ball, he can make forward runs, he can shield the ball. He's good defensively, but I don't think he's an out-and-out defensive midfield player. I think he'll play in one of the roles either side of a holding midfield player, whoever that might be.
Gabby, you have to chime in on this.
It's an interesting one. I don't think he's the heir to Busquets either. He just has a different skill set. He could grow into that, probably. But he's not there yet. It's not what he does. I think... I could see Barcelona next season maybe having a 4 or 5 player almost rotation in midfield, because obviously you've got Pedri in the mix, you've got Gavi, and you've got Frankie de Jong as well. And I think there's going to be certain situations against teams that shut up shop where you want a physical player with quality making those late runs into the box to pick up cutbacks and whatnot.
Because there was a period earlier in the season for Milan where he was playing almost as the number 10, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's
making
played
runs into the box.
He's played as a number 10. He's done that too. A lot of people are also going to speculate that Frankie de Jong, who is perhaps a saleable asset, that he could be moving on. Would Kessie be a replacement? Different sorts of players. But then, given the way Frankie de Jong performed last season, I think Kessie would be an upgrade. But again, I think Barcelona's plan is to try to keep De Jong and keep Kessie and have that kind of depth in the middle of the park.
Final two questions now, because trust me, they are massively important. Abu Dakir wants to know, Gab, is the Italian food in Paris better than the Italian food in London?
That's a really, really, really good question.
I've never had Italian food here, but there's a lot of good Italian food places in London.
I think... You can get the greatest chefs and export the greatest techniques, but you need to have the raw material. You need to have the greatest produce. And sorry, England, there's far better produce in France.
But the one thing you can't do when you go to an Italian restaurant, and Gab has told this to us many, many times, you don't look at the menu. They tell you what they're going to cook you. Is that right, Gab?
It depends what kind of restaurant you're in, but if you're in certain types of restaurants, it's pretty obvious you're a fool if you just start studying the menu. I mean, come on.
And you order lasagna.
Well, whatever. You're not at the Olive Garden here, right?
Olive Garden has some good breadsticks, though.
That's fine, but you want to ask them, hey, what are you excited about today? And they tell you, and you order that. Then that's how you do it in certain types of restaurants. You don't sit there and look at the... Yeah, let's not bring that up. That brings back bad memories.
He gets
that,
angry.
That was another Champions
angry.
League little soiree.
In Milan, yeah.
All right. Well, Gab's got to take us to an Italian place in Paris. Who would have thought? Final question now for Gab as well. Your favorite gelato. All the food questions going to Gab, man. I'm jealous.
My favorite ice cream?
Yeah, your favorite flavor, I suppose, of gelato. We found out Nano.
Yeah, I like Amarena. Black cherry.
Oh, that's a bit rogue.
It's not. It's very common in Italy.
Oh, that's true. I'm Italian, so we know.
I mean,
a little story about gelato with Ian Dark. He wanted us to go to Lake Como, which we did, and we had this lovely meal. And at the end of it, he said, "What gelatos do you do?" The woman came out, the waitress came out, and mentioned 20 gelatos. Banana wasn't one of them. And he said, as you can imagine, then he said, "Can I have a banana one, please?" And then got upset that.
They didn't have it.
What is he, like six? Who orders banana ice cream?
That's the story. That's
banana
what he did.
Banana gelato popular in Italy?
No. I mean, it's like something a child would eat.
He got the raving hump that they didn't have it.
If you're going to go fruit, you know, you can go strawberry, you can go raspberry, some nice varieties of melon. You can really go banana for ice cream.
Doesn't that make it more sorbet?
No, because it's still gelato. You still have the cream and whatever. Sorbet is something completely different.
Yeah. I like pistachio gelato. I had some in Bologna, and to this day, I don't think I've ever had a better, I guess, dessert. Oh, my days. Bologna, call me back. Let me come. Right?
Bologna's a nice place.
Bologna's a great place to eat. Gab, does it get your seal of approval?
Bologna is one of the culinary capitals of Italy. From the eating perspective, yes. Bologna.
What about this, Gab? I'm going to a wedding in Ostuni. Is that good?
I have never been there. I'm sure it's
near Puglia.
I'm told it's a beautiful place. I've been to Puglia. Yeah. It's a beautiful place. You need to have orecchiette pasta with cime di rapa. You might know them as broccoli rabe.
You might need to write that down for me.
Right, we'll wrap things up there then. We're going to get some more food recommendations from Gab. He's got to take us for that expensive dinner so we can look at the gorgeous Eiffel Tower behind us. But thank you guys so much for your questions. Make sure to join us again tomorrow for more ESPN FC. Frank Leboeuf will be joining us as we continue our build-up to the UEFA Champions League final right here in Paris.